Chogger, game one last night. I thought the first, like, Montreal got off to the good start. They had some good chances. Couldn't beat Carrick, couldn't beat Fleury. And then Vegas scored and kind of took over the game. And Montreal, if you look so far in the playoffs, when they score first, they're dominant. If they don't, they don't have as much success.
Yeah. You know, I wonder what happens in that game if they find a way to break through. Because I thought they came out and played really well early. I don't know if it was Vegas wasn't playing great or if it was Montreal playing well, but they carried play, they had some grade-A scoring chances, and they couldn't find a way to beat Fleury. If they do, I just can't help but wonder which direction that game goes. If Vegas would have been able to regroup and rally and push back, they probably would have. But it's a huge difference for Montreal. And then once they got chasing the game against that team, I just thought they've taken some stupid penalties and just handing things to them. And that's just, it's too much of a mismatch. You just can't hand that team opportunity. And I thought they did with some bad penalties. And you know, Carey Price was good, made some phenomenal saves. But I think the other guy at the other end was better. And Fleury was phenomenal when he needed to be early.
Yeah, he did, and it's funny because Montreal is 8-1 when they score first.
Yep.
But they're 0-3 when they give up the first goal, and you know, like it's been huge for them. You know, Tampa Bay is exactly the same. Tampa Bay is 8-1 when they score first, and 0-3 when they give up the first goal. So you know, there's two teams who they get in front, and Montreal. You're right. I thought they had some good chances, and right before the first Vegas goal, Josh Anderson had a glorious chance. And that's one of the guys you want having a good early chance.
Well, how snake bit is he though? Yeah. I mean, for Montreal to be where they are. And for Josh Anderson not really to be contributing much offensively is, I mean, that's impressive. If he gets going, just another guy that, you know, they got to get him going. He needs to be contributing because he's big, fast, powerful, and he should be able to thrive against a team like Vegas. So a great opportunity for him, but he's just not finishing lately. So they needed that. Yeah, they could have. That would have been big for them, for Anderson to have scored and for them to have gotten off to a good start like that. I just thought they did some really good things early on in that game. It almost seemed like they just came out with a really good formula. You know, everything from the way they were carrying play, but the way they were kind of banging around in the crease and getting in Fleury's face a little bit, and they were dictating. They came out with the right stuff, and Fleury was just like, nope.
No, he was Fleury was excellent. And then Price, you know, because in the second period, Vegas really could have taken over that game. And yep. I thought Price was excellent then. So Montreal will have to regroup. You know, Jeff Petrie, all the talk is, oh, he'll be early in the playoffs. Well, I know you don't want to rush the guy back, but, man, Brent Kulak, he probably could play in your second pair for a bit on the left side. But when you ask him to play his offside in the second pair, it's just it's not ideal.
No, for sure. And the thing is Vegas, like, they roll four lines over the boards, and they all, I mean, they can kind of all do different things, but if all of them have some size, and all of them have some physicality, and all of them have the type of players on the line that can expose D-men who aren't quite up to it. There really isn't soft spots throughout their lineup, and that's where, if you aren't where you need to be on the blue line, where it hurts you, so... Petrie is, Petrie's pretty critical for them. I love Romanov, though. Romanov, however we're supposed to be saying it. That's a good young player, hey? Like, he's good. There's some real upside there. I think it's good for him to be in and getting this experience because I think there's a real good D-man there.
Yeah, you know, and he's kind of the prime example, Chogger. The article really just came out at OilersNation.com a little while ago that I wrote about, and I went back to 2010 till 2020 for the NHL playoffs and the two final teams each year in the postseason. And when, like, the most common thing is experience. And then the size of these blue lines. And the reason I bring it up is because I look at the Oilers. And, like, I think McDavid and Draisaitl will have a decade of their window to win, if we want to call it that. They have lots of time. Now, I know they're only under contract for 5 years and 4 years, so, you know, that's a small, you know, concern for some people. But when I look at the orders and I see McDavid and Draisaitl, and, you know, they've got good guys coming in, Bouchard and Broberg and Samorkov. But when you look at the cup-winning teams, you don't have three. Because even if, let's say, in 3 years, the Oilers are a team that's going to be battling for the cup. Let's just say that. I know Oilers fans don't want to hear it, but let's just say that. Well, even by then, you know, Bouchard at most at most is going to have like 250 games, which is okay. But Broberg and Samorikov are going to be in the hundreds, probably less. And just history tells us you don't really win if your blue line doesn't have that much experience. So I'm very curious to see what happens in the next kind of 2 years to 3 years. And, you know, if we see one of those highly touted young defensemen moved in a trade for a more veteran established defenseman.
Well, this is precisely what I was talking to Ken Holland about and asking him about in his year-end media availability, right? About the idea that, yes, you know, there's some nice pieces sitting there waiting in the cupboard, but you got a group that, with McDavid and Draisaitl, if you put the right pieces around them, you should be able to be kind of going for it sooner rather than later here, like this upcoming season. But the problem, Greg, they have right now is, I mean, I'm not sure what the guarantee is. They're going to put a roster together that's going to be any better than the one they had last year. And so to start the year next year, and then you talk about, well, take that group and inject a rookie defenseman in Bouchard, who's going to have some learning, growing pains. It's just the way it's going to be for young defensemen. Then you think, well, Broberg's coming the next year, so now you're going to have two defensemen that are playing in their first year and a half in the league on a team that you want to contend for a division and push for a conference final or a Stanley Cup final. Like, you just don't really see that. And so I agree with exactly what you're saying. There's a forward group who, at its core, McDavid and Draisaitl, should be able to lead the charge. But then you've got a blue line that's like 3 years behind development-wise. And we've been talking about this for years. The development on the blue line is not in sync with the development up front, and it's going to cause this fundamental issue for them on what to do about that. And you got to do one of two things. You either got to tell the forwards to be patient until the D-men catch up. Well, good luck with that in this fan base, in this group. Or you trade a little of the future to make yourself better right now on the blue line. And so maybe that's what they have to do. It's okay to bring a young guy along if you think you got a top pairing or a top four guy like Bouchard and a real power play monster or something like that. Okay. But you can only have so many projects on the blue line happening at once. And I would suggest to you that Ethan Bear continues to be a project. He's a young player, and they aren't 1,000% sure yet what he's going to be. Caleb Jones, certainly exactly the same thing. William Lagesson, absolutely the same thing. And Evan Bouchard, for sure, as well. Well, that's not what you win championships with.
No, it's very true. Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Sharp. To the CFL, the schedule came out today for the Elks. I think I called them Elks a few times yesterday, but the Elks, I'm going to try to go perfect now. Unique schedule, it's 14 games.
We'll keep each other in check.
Yeah, it's 14 games. They play BC twice, but both games just happen to be in BC. You know, they're kind of it's a unique schedule because the Elks are playing like two on the road, two at home, then three on the road, two at home, two on the road, two at home. Now, obviously, I know they come home to practice and such, but what do you make of the schedule, A, and then B, what's kind of your expectations? You know, here we are. It's been almost 21 months. They got a new coach, kind of their second head coach, even though their previous head coach didn't even coach a game, but got paid for it. Milanovic before he went back to the NFL. Like, what do you make of Elizondo and what we should expect from the Elks?
You know, I don't really have a solid answer because, I mean, there's so much new. I mean, you start with the staff. But then also, I mean, for these guys that haven't played a whole lot, what do you expect? Like, how many guys are going to pick up right where they left off and be just as good? How many guys are going to completely fall off? How many guys will come back in better shape than they've ever been in their lives and blow the doors off because they're finally healthy? How many guys? I just think, like, trying to prognosticate what's going to happen with the CFL team on a CFL roster after this amount of time off, we can guess. But I just don't think we know. So we know the core pieces that they have and roughly what they can do. And you'd think, okay, well, the hope would be they'd be able to come back and still be key pieces. But would anybody blame anyone if their game had tailed off significantly with all this time off and so long since they've played? You know, are we going to find that naturally it's easier for the defenders? The guys that, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, because, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, if that's where the skills maybe get a little bit dulled. The hands aren't as good, the timing, the reads, all of that. I don't know what we'll see.
It's going to be an interesting one to see, Sharger. We talked about it. You and I have both mentioned it. Elliot Friedman mentioned again, you know, the Oilers and Nugent Hopkins grinding to try to find some common ground here. And, you know, my understanding is, you know, that there wasn't an offer made that, you know, probably around 5.75. I just couldn't get an exact on the term, right? So I wonder, like, I just don't know on the open market what Nugent Hopkins will get when you consider what forwards got when it came to term in this flat cap, right? There's no forwards who got more than 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So what does it look like? I said before, I mean, I think that the negotiation right now probably lives at the low end and the high end at, you know, $5.25 million up to, say, $6.25 million. And it's kind of in that 5-6 year range. You know, maybe there was a time and place where there were, you know, 6-7 year deals that were possible, but probably where things are at now, it's more in that 5-6 year range. And you know, if there weren't a significant discrepancy in the dollar figure, I'm sure it would be done by now. So if you guess that it's in the 5-6 year range, and I would put $1 million between them at least, I would think. So it's five times 5.25, five times, you know, six times six and a quarter. Like, it's somewhere in there, I believe. And I don't know exactly where it lives right at this moment, but you got to think that there's $1 million between the two sides. Otherwise, you'd think that they just find a way to bridge the gap. So I don't know that for sure, but, you know, that's probably what makes sense. And I think as far as the open market goes, I mean, you're taking a risk and you're guessing, because the flat cap, it caught a lot of people, you know, by surprise last year that the numbers weren't there. I don't think the market will be as depressed for dollars as it was last year. It may be a little bit more for term, but I don't think for dollars it's going to be quite as pushed back as last year's was. So I do believe there'll be $6 million out there for Ryan Nugent Hopkins, $6 million plus, I think, on probably a 6 year deal. I think that's probably out there for him. But maybe I'm wrong.
Shogger, it'll be interesting to watch. Have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good, pal.